A Second Chance. 1. A Second Chance. The Story of a Near-Death Experience. Chapter 1. Separating the Mud from the Animals. Sukadeva Goswami said to King Pariksit, in the city known as Kanyakubja, Kannauj in present-day India, there lived a Brahmana named Ajamila who married a prostitute maidservant and lost all his Brahminical qualities because of the association of that low-class woman. Ajamila gave trouble to others by arresting them, by cheating them in gambling, or by directly plundering them. This was the way he earned his livelihood and maintained his wife and children. Srimad Bhagavatam 6.1.21-22. The Law of Consequences. Although Ajamila was born of a Brahmana father and strictly followed the regulative principles, no meat eating, no illicit sex, no intoxication, and no gambling, he fell in love with a prostitute, and therefore all his good qualities were lost. As soon as a person abandons the regulative principles, he engages in various kinds of sinful activities. The regulative principles serve to keep us on the standard of human life. But if we abandon them, we fall down into illusory life, or Maya. If we want to advance in spiritual life, we must follow the regulative principles and rectify the mistakes of our past lives and this present life. Only those who have become free from all kinds of sinful reactions and are now engaged in pious activities can fully understand God. Persons who commit sinful activities and who are overly attached to bodily comforts and mundane friendship, society, and family affection cannot be spiritually self-realized. The fault of illicit connection with women is that it destroys all one's Brahminical qualities. Ajamila abandoned all the regulative principles due to his association with the prostitute. He became a cheater and a thief. One who acts dishonestly will be punished. He may escape the king's or government's law, but he can never escape God's law. The materialists think, "I'm cheating God, and I can continue to gratify my senses by all nefarious activities." But the Shastras, scriptures, state that such persons are cheating their own happiness in the end, because they will have to accept a material body again and suffer accordingly. A man who is born in a Brahmana family is expected to be truthful and self-controlled, to be fully cognizant of spiritual life and its practical application, and to have complete faith in the statements of the Shastras. If a person does not follow the Shastras, he becomes degraded. The great sages and rishis throughout the world have given guidance, and their words are recorded in the Shastras. But rascals and fools misinterpret the scriptures and misguide the people. At present, the Bhagavad Gita is interpreted in so many different ways, and these so-called explanations are accepted by the innocent public as authoritative knowledge. One interpreter explains that the battlefield of Kurukshetra refers to the material body, and that the five Pandava brothers are really the five senses of the material body. But this is not the proper understanding. How can anyone explain the Bhagavad Gita when he does not understand it? Such an attempt is nonsense. To understand the bona fide science of God, one must approach a bona fide spiritual master and hear the Bhagavad Gita from him. We have to follow the great personalities, the previous acharyas, spiritual masters. That will be to our profit. We should not speculate and make up our own statements. We should simply accept the injunctions given by the great acharyas, because that is the process of the Vedic system. One must approach a bona fide spiritual master and inquire from him submissively. The absolute truth is explained in the scriptures, and the scriptures are explained by the spiritual master or a saintly person. Whatever the bona fide, self-realized spiritual master says must be accepted. There is no room for interpretation of the sastras. In the Srimad Bhagavatam it is said that Krishna lifted Govardhana Hill, just as a child lifts a mushroom. He did it so easily, but people do not believe it. Those who do not believe in the Bhagavatam interpret an indirect meaning. The meaning is clear, and there is nothing to be misunderstood, but these rascals draw their own conclusions nonetheless. When the language is clear, why should we interpret? By interpretation, so-called scholars and theologians have played havoc with the Vedic literature. No bona fide acharya has ever interpreted the sastras according to his own whims, but many so-called modern scholars and leaders have done so, and therefore people are gliding down into the most abominable conditions of material existence. In the interest of the people, these rascals should be exposed. Therefore we are presenting the Bhagavad Gita as it is, the degradation of modern society. Here the Srimad Bhagavatam says that the Brahmana Jamila became attached to a prostitute and thus lost his brahminical qualifications. He was a young man of about 20 when this happened. Because of his illicit association with the prostitute, Ajamila was forced to live by begging, borrowing, stealing, and gambling. These verses indicate how degraded one becomes simply by indulging in illicit sex with a prostitute. Illicit sex is not possible with chaste women, but only with unchaste women. The more society allows prostitution and illicit sex, the more impetus it gives to cheaters, thieves, plunderers, drunkards, and gamblers. Therefore we first advise all the disciples in our Krishna consciousness movement to avoid illicit sex, which is the beginning of all abominable life, and which is followed by meat-eating, gambling, and intoxication, one after another. Of course, restraint is difficult, but it is quite possible, if one fully surrenders to Krishna, since all abominable habits gradually become distasteful for a Krishna-conscious person. While in his time Ajamila was an exception, in the present age there are millions of Ajamilas. But if illicit sex is allowed to increase, the entire society will be condemned, for it will be full of rogues, thieves, cheaters, and so forth. Therefore, if we actually want to improve the world situation, we have to take to Krishna consciousness, as that gives the best service to human society, both materially and spiritually. Whatever abominable characteristics we have developed, We have only to take to the process of bhakti yoga, or devotional service, in order to completely eradicate them. We have developed so many anarthas, or unwanted habits, the chief of which are meat-eating intoxication, illicit sex, and gambling. But we can curb them by accepting the principles of Bhakti Yoga as they are presented in the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam. Scarcely anyone knows these Vedic scriptures, and therefore no one heeds their instructions. People would rather read all kinds of books by all kinds of rascals, but the result of such books is to kill Krishna consciousness. In illusion, a person may think he can get rid of unwanted habits and be saved by some artificial, mystic meditation. And in fact, at one time it was possible to attain liberation by practicing Ashtanga Yoga, or Eightfold Yogic Meditation. But at present almost no one can follow this process, and artificial attempts at yoga will not help us. Therefore, to help the fallen people of this age of Kali, the Supreme Lord appeared 500 years ago as Sri Caitanya Mahaprabhu. He knew that the people of this age would not even be able to follow the regulative principles, what to speak of practicing Ashtanga Yoga. Therefore he gave them a mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, so that we can gradually be elevated to the highest position of spiritual life. Other processes of purification or sacrifice cannot be followed in this age, because for the most part people are too degraded. But anyone may take to this process of chanting Hare Krishna. As it is said in the Brand Naradiya Purana, March 8, 126. Haranama Haranama Haranamava Kevalam Kala Nasti Eva Nasti Eva Nasti Eva Gadaranirtha. In this age of quarrel and hypocrisy, the only means of deliverance is chanting the holy name of the Lord. There is no other way. There is no other way. There is no other way. Chanting the holy name of the Lord is always superbly effective, but it is especially effective in this age of Kali. Its practical effectiveness will now be explained by Sukadeva Goswami through the history of Ajamila, who was freed from the hands of Yamaraja, the universal judge, simply because of chanting the holy name of Narayana. The dangers of illicit sex. To benefit fully from chanting the holy name of the Lord, one needs to chant offenselessly. And to guarantee offenseless chanting, some austerity is required. First of all, one should not indulge in illicit sex. Sex is one of the bodily needs, so it is sanctioned in the sastra to some degree. One is allowed to live peacefully with one's wife, and have sex for begetting children. Other than to beget children, however, there is no need of indulging in sex. One who does not take the responsibility of family life, but remains a bachelor, and engages in illicit sex is considered irresponsible, and he will have to suffer the consequences. Of course, one who thinks that family life is too big a responsibility can forgo it, and thus avoid a lot of trouble. Family responsibility is very great, Therefore, if a man feels he cannot accept the responsibility, he should remain a grammarkari, a celibate student. A person who practices the science of brahmacharya under the care of a spiritual master automatically becomes 75% free from material entanglement. Today, however, no one wants to undergo the austerities of brahmacharya. Everyone wants to remain unmarried, but also engage in sex. In this way, people are losing all good character. To maintain a woman who is nothing more than a prostitute and engage in illicit sex with her for producing children is sinful. Such children are unwanted, varna sankara, and in this way society becomes degraded. Ajamila became attracted to a prostitute, and with her he begot 10 children. He became so degraded that he could not execute honest business to support his large family, and he was forced to beg, borrow, and steal to maintain them. If a person indulges in illicit sex, intoxication and gambling automatically follow. His expenses will be unlimited, and to meet all his expenses he will have to adopt methods of cheating and stealing. The basis for Ajamila's degradation was his illicit connection with the prostitute. Therefore, in the practice of Krishna consciousness we do not allow any illicit sex. Devotees must either get married or remain celibate. This regulation is very effective for maintaining a high standard of purity. Chapter 2. In imitation of the original, Sukadeva Goswami continued, "My dear king, 88 years of his life passed by, while Ajamila thus spent his time in abominable, sinful activities to maintain his family of 10 sons and the prostitute. The youngest child was a baby named Narayana, who was naturally very dear to his father and mother." Srimad Bhagavatam 6.1.23-24. Parental affection. Ajamila's sinfulness is shown by the fact that, although he was 88 years old, he had a very young child. According to Vedic culture, one should leave home as soon as he has reached 50 years of age. One should not live at home and go on producing children. Sex is allowed for 25 years between the ages of 25 and 50. After that, one should give up the habit of sex and leave home as a vanaprastha, and then properly take sannyasa. Ajamila, however, because of his association with a prostitute, lost all Brahminical culture and became most sinful, even in his so-called household life. Ajamila was a young man of 20 when he met the prostitute, and he begot 10 children in her. When he was almost 90 years old, the time came when he was to die. At that time most of his children were grown up, so naturally the youngest child, Narayana, became his parents' favorite, and Ajamila was very much attached to him. A baby's smile immediately attracts the father, mother, and relatives. When the child begins to talk, making sounds in broken language, it is very joyful for the parents. Unless this attraction is there, it is not possible to raise the child with affection. Parental affection is natural even among the animal species. In Kanpura, a monkey once came with her baby near the room. where we were staying. The baby monkey entered the window through the bars, and the mother became very upset. She became mad with anxiety. Somehow or other, we pushed the baby monkey out of the bars, and immediately the mother embraced the baby and took it away with her. In human society, the affection between a mother and her child is very much eulogized, but as we see, this relationship is visible even among the animals. Therefore, it is not an outstanding qualification, it is material nature's law. Unless the mother and child are affectionately connected, it is not possible for the child to grow up. Parental affection is natural and necessary, but it does not raise one to the spiritual platform. The character of the debauchee Ajamila was abominable, but he was still very affectionate toward his youngest child. Although Ajamila was nearly 90, he was still enjoying the child's playful pastimes, just as Maharaj Ananda and Mother Yasoda enjoyed the childhood pastimes of Lord Krishna. Spiritual affection and variety. Parental affection in this material world is a perverted reflection of parental affection in the spiritual world, where it is found in its pure, original form. Everything originates with the transcendental reality. As stated in the Vedanta Sutra 1.1.2, Janmadiya Sayata, the Supreme Absolute Truth is that from which everything emanates. If the affection between a child and his parents did not exist in the Absolute Truth, it could not exist in the material world. Since the Absolute Truth is the source of everything, whatever varieties we see here in this material world are simply reflections of the varieties in the spiritual world. If the Absolute Truth were without variety, then where have all these varieties come from? No. The Absolute Truth is not impersonal, nirākara, or without variety, nirvisesa. Still, some persons, called mayavadis, are so disappointed and frustrated with the imperfect varieties of this material world that they imagine the spiritual world to be impersonal and without variety. These impersonalists realize that they are Brahman, or spirit, but they do not know that there are innumerable planets in the Brahmajyoti, or spiritual atmosphere. They think that the Brahmajyoti itself is all in all. The impersonalists have no information of the Vaikuntha planets, and due to their imperfect knowledge they again come down to these material planets. As said in the Srimad Bhagavatam, October 2, 32, Uniravindaksavimuktamaninas, Tvayi Astubhavitavasetha Budhaya, Iruhaya Kratrina Parampadam Tata, Patanti Adhonadrati Yasmad Angraya. Although impersonalists are almost liberated, still, on account of their negligence of the lotus feet of Krishna, their intelligence is not yet purified. Thus, despite performing severe austerities to rise up to the platform of Brahman, they must fall down again to this material world, spiritual form and spiritual pastimes. The impersonalist philosophers cannot differentiate between activities in the material world and similar activities in the spiritual world. Nor do they differentiate between the material form and God's form. They are convinced that the impersonal Brahmajyoti, the spiritual effulgence emanating from the Lord's body, is the supreme absolute truth. The Mayavadis mistakenly assume that when God appears he accepts a material body, just as we have taken this material form in the material world. That kind of thinking is impersonalism, or Mayavada philosophy. God has a form, but not a material form like cars. His form is Sakchidananda Vigraha, a spiritual form full of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. Anyone who understands the transcendental nature of Krishna's form achieves perfection. This Krishna confirms in the Bhagavad Gita, 4.9. Janma karma kami divayam, evramyo vedi tat vita, tayakt vedet kampunar janma, nadi mam iti so rajuna. When I come, I do not accept a material body, my birth and activities are completely spiritual. And anyone who perfectly understands this is liberated. When Krishna displayed himself as the perfect child before Mother Yasoda, he would break everything when she did not supply him with butter, as if he were in need of butter. So God can display himself exactly like an ordinary human being, yet he remains the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Impersonalists cannot know God, because they see him as an ordinary man. This is rascaldom, as Krishna declares in the Bhagavad Gita, 9.11, Avijananti Mam Mudha. Only rascals accept me as an ordinary human being. The Mayavadis say, oh, here is a child. How can he be God? Even Brahma and Indra became bewildered. They thought, how can this boy be the Supreme Lord? Let me test him. Sometimes a so-called incarnation of God declares, I'm God. He should be tested to determine whether or not he is actually God. The Mayavadis are claiming, I'm God, I'm Krishna, I am Rama. Everyone becomes Krishna, everyone becomes Rama, yet people do not challenge their claims. If you are Rama, exhibit your supreme potency. Rama constructed a bridge over the Indian Ocean. What have you done? At the age of 7, Krishna lifted Govardhana Hill. What have you done? When they are challenged by Krishna's pastimes, these rascals say, it is all fiction, it is all legend. Therefore people accept an ordinary person as Rama or Krishna. This nonsense is going on, and both those who declare themselves to be God and those who accept them as God will have to suffer for it. Anyone can claim to be God, and any foolish person can accept, but no one will benefit by serving a false god. Once Lord Brahma thought that Krishna might also be such a false god. He observed that a mere boy in Vrindavana, India, was accepted as the Supreme Lord, and that he was performing extraordinary activities. So Brahma decided to make a test. He took away all of Krishna's calves and playmates and hid them. When Brahma returned to Vrindavana after 1 year and saw the same calves and playmates still there, he could understand that Krishna had expanded himself by his unlimited potency into so many calves and boys. The boys' own mothers could not detect that their sons were Krishna's expansions, Though the mothers could not explain why every evening, when their boys returned home from the fields, their affection for them increased more and more. Finally, Brahma surrendered to Krishna, composing very nice prayers in glorification of the Lord. Similarly, Indra became bewildered when Krishna told his father, Nanda Maharaja, there is no need of performing sacrifices to Indra, because he is under the order of the Supreme Lord. Krishna did not say to Nanda Maharaja, I'm the Supreme Lord, but he said, Indra is under the order of the Supreme Lord, therefore he has to supply you with water. So there is no need of performing this yajna, sacrifice, to him. When the sacrifice to Indra was stopped, he became furious and tried to punish the inhabitants of Vrindavana by sending incessant torrents of rain for 7 days. Vrindavana was nearly drowned in water, so great was the downpour. But Krishna, a child of about 7 years, immediately lifted Govardhana Hill and invited all the residents of Vrindavana, together with their animals, to take shelter underneath the hill. Krishna held up the hill for 7 days and nights without taking any food or rest, just to protect the residents of Vrindavana. Thus Indra understood that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this way, the Srimad Bhagavatam warns that if even great personalities like Brahma and Indra can sometimes become bewildered by Maya, the external manifestation of Krishna's energy, then what to speak of us?